The Life Story of Edwin Marion Whiting by Elda W. Brown. When Edwin Marion Whiting was born, August 8, 1857, he came into a typical pioneer world. All of the hardships that had faced the Utah pioneers since they first arrived in Utah were found in Manti, at that time. 1856 had been one of the grasshopper years and everything green in San Pete Valley had been eaten. Edwin's uncle, Walter Cox, had been blessed in having some of his grain supply left when he had moved into the valley. This supply provided food for the less fortunate saints. No doubt it was this grain that helped sustain the life of Mary Elizabeth Cox Whiting's fifth child, Edwin. Edwin Whiting, Edwin Marion's father, was a polygamist and had other wives and other children. He knew and loved each of his own. His family was important to him and he spent his life working to provide those loved ones with the necessities of life. That he was very successful in this was shown by the fact that all of his boys learned the carpenter trade in his chair factory and the blacksmith trade in his shops. Each child learned to love the tilling of the soil by working with their father in his garden and orchard because he was a master gardener. It wasn't enough that children learned to work. The important thing in the Whiting home was that children liked to work and took pride in a job well done, whether it was building a chair or sewing a seam. Mary Elizabeth had taught school a number of years before she came to Utah, and rearing her family did not stop her from continuing the service in Manti. Indeed, her talents were needed here more than before. It was important that children learn, no matter where the saints were living. Mary taught school in Springville, when President Young told them to move back there, after 12 hard years of fighting frost from their orchards and gardens in Manti. Soon Edwin Marion was ready to attend this school himself. He had been blessed with a healthy body and an inquiring mind. He was ready for all his mother could teach, and was soon helping her to teach the others in her classes. This was a new world, one beyond the doing with your hands. Edwin shared with his mother the thrill of the world of books. In all his life he was never able to read and learn all he wanted to, although he read every minute he could spare from his other duties, and was always looking for something more to read. He never missed a chance to attend the few months of school that were available. When a chance came for him to take some elocution lessons from his brother-in-law, Aaron Johnson, he took them gladly. This was to open a whole new world, the world of the stage and make-believe, the world of literature and stories in action. If possible, these were even more exciting than the books alone. Being a handsome young hero, or the Histed villain, appealed to Edwin very much. The plays were usually presented in the hometown first, and then in the neighboring towns, by invitation. The tasks in large families were assigned pretty much to age groups. When one age was ready to take over more responsible jobs, then the younger children were given a chance at the simpler jobs. Edwin and the brothers his age never seemed to object to the task of herding the family milk cows in the summer pastures. It was more pleasure than work to pack a lunch and plan to spend the day protecting the family stock from sly Indians or from straying off into forbidden mountains. Perhaps adding to the fun was the large number of brothers who shared this task. Two brothers near his age carried the same given name as Edwin himself, to distinguish the boys they were usually called by both names while they were young. Edwin learned the love of many people who were good, and were striving to live by the commandments of the new church they had accepted. He learned that any one of the mothers in the big house would supply him with food when hungry, and sympathy when hurt. Kindness and tolerance were built into his character by the thoughts and actions of those around him. Polygamy was a hard way of life to those who fought it and became bitter, but it was a great builder of virtues to those who sought to do first the will of their Father in heaven. So it was in the Whiting home. This was proved to Edwin by the fact that when he was a hungry boy he could ask any one of the mothers for the bread and butter that he so much wanted, and get it. Life in Springville was better for the Whiting family than it had been in San Pete, because the weather was not so cold, and they were able to raise good gardens and the orchards they planted produced fruit of all kinds. Father Edwin Whiting built homes for his families in Springville, Mapleton and in Hobble Creek Canyon, where some of them spent the summer. Edwin Marion grew up in this home where children were taught to work. He learned to do the things that were necessary to provide for a large family. But life, in these times, was not constant, and Edwin's older brothers, Albert and Charles, and their families had been called to go to Arizona to help settle a new community there. Edwin's youngest sister, May, had been ill with heart trouble, and when Charles came back from Arizona on a visit, the family decided it might improve May's health if she were to go back with him. Mary Elizabeth took her boys, who were unmarried, and her daughter May, and went to Brigham City, Arizona. This trip was probably the most important event in Edwin's life, because it was in Arizona that he met Anna Maria Isaacson, who was to become his wife. Up until the time he met Mariah, he had planned to return to Utah as soon as his mother was settled. Meeting Mariah changed his desires. This move to Arizona began Edwin's life, separate and apart from his family of brothers and sisters. Edwin worked at the United Order in Brigham City for a while, and then he obtained employment at other places around Winslow, where he went to work for the railroad. This was interesting and exciting to Edwin, and he wanted to become an engineer. He passed the necessary requirements, except for the eye tests. He was found to be colorblind to the red and green signals used on the railroads, so his dreams of being an engineer vanished. Edwin continued his work on the railroad during the years he waited for Mariah to become old enough for her parents to give their permission for their marriage. In the meantime, the United Order in Brigham City was abandoned, and the Saints went elsewhere to settle. Mariah and her family had gone to a little settlement on up the Colorado River called the Meadows. In September 1881, Edwin went to the Meadows and claimed his bride. She had reached her 18th birthday in June. Edwin had saved his money and had purchased a team and wagon, and they were ready to travel to St. George to the LDS Temple to be married for eternity. Traveling with them were Sully Richardson, Edwin's good friend, and his bride, Rena, who had come up from Gullah Valley and were going to be married also. The experiences of the wedding trip are in Mariah's story. When they came back to Arizona, both couples lived at the old settlement in Brigham City. Edwin and five others bought out the remaining interests left in the fort, and Edwin continued working for John W. Young, who had a contract from the railroad, taking most of his pay in credit. Edwin finally started a store with a share of the goods he received from the division of the stores and the blacksmith shop in Brigham City. This was the beginning of Edwin's business career. When Edwin had his store in Brigham City, an old Indian chief came to buy a wagon. Arrangements were made and the wagon arrived. When the old chief came to get the wagon, about 300 other Navajo Indians came with him. They wanted to trade Edwin one gentle horse and one wild horse for his team. Edwin told them he would rather keep his own horses. He then proceeded to hitch up his own horses just to show the Indians how the harnesses and team worked. Some of the Indians climbed in and wanted a ride. The Indian who got into the front seat with Edwin was showing off, picked up the whip and hit the horses. They broke into a run and ran so fast that Edwin had a hard time getting them under control. He was so amused by the way the Indians were acting that he could not worry much about the horses and wagon. The Indians in the back were hanging on for dear life, and looked as though they thought they were going to be killed any minute. The Indian in front was hanging onto the seat, and was so scared that Edwin couldn't get mad at him for hitting the horses in the first place. This incident always brought a laugh to Edwin when he thought of it or told about it later. Stores. The first store in Brigham City was only a small one, and stocked mostly with goods that had been fort supplies when Brigham City was disbanded. Edwin had received, as part of his share, a large box of hats and caps. This supply lasted them for many years. This store did quite well until the completion of the railroad, then the people moved away because work was not available. The next venture in the store business was after Edwin and Mariah had moved back to Mapleton, Utah. Edwin's sister, Harriet Curtis, had been running a little store in her home and wasn't well enough to carry on. Edwin decided to buy her share of the merchandise and paid her $0.80. Edwin built shelves in their front room, and soon they were in business. As their stock sold, they bought more, and Edwin soon erected a new building at the side of their home for the store. They had finished their new brick home before this. Business in this store did not require a constant clerk, so a string was tied to a little bell that rang in the house when someone wanted service. Everyone was conscious of the bell, and when it rang, Edwin, Mariah, Eddie, May or Martha would go out to wait on the customer. One day a little Bromley boy rang the bell and Martha went to wait on him. The boy had some eggs to trade for goods, and looked rather disappointed when he found that Edwin or Eddie were not there, but he finally let Martha wait on him. She got his rice and sugar ready and asked him why he wanted her Pa or Eddie. The boy said, "Ma said to get one of them if I could, 'cause they give more." The store in Mapleton never made a lot of money, but the family enjoyed keeping it, and with careful management they were always able to make a profit. After Edwin and his family moved to Arizona in 1901, they decided to build a new store on Commercial Street in St. John's. All of the boys helped haul the many, many loads of sandstone from the nearby hills, by team and wagon. Edwin hired two Welsh men, who were masons, to lay up the walls. These men, Solomon Waite and Eliezer Jones, sang as they worked. All of the Whiting children, as well as the neighbors, liked to hear them sing Kitty Wells, Molly Darling, When You and I Were Young Maggie, and many others. Edwin and his boys did most of the carpenter work. When Edwin put on the roof, the older boys carried material up to him on a big ladder. One day, when the roof was almost finished, Ernest was sitting up on the very top, lost his balance and fell. As he rolled off, he hit the scaffolding and then fell onto the ground. Edwin went down to the rescue so fast he almost fell. Ernest had yelled all the way down, but when he hit the ground he just lay quiet. The accident really frightened the other children, and they all started crying. Edwin picked up Ernest, who was almost as large as he was, and carried him into the house. Finally, Ernest caught his breath and sat up. He had a terrible headache, but no broken bones or other visible injuries. The old Kemp store in Kong Cho was closed, and Edwin and Mariah decided to buy the small inventory, which consisted of a supply of medicine, native herbs, a laxative, and wizard oil, which the family used to relieve their many toothaches throughout the years. The native herbs and wizard oil were good selling items. However, the main things were counters and showcases. The novelty was a slot machine with a place to drop a nickel. On two numbers a dime would come out and on two zeros nothing came out. Edwin took the machine apart and marked out the zeros. He said no kid was going to lose a nickel in their store. Edwin was not fond of clerking, but he always helped make out the orders. All of the dry goods had to be ordered by mail out of a catalog, usually Butler Bros. In Chicago. They always sent a check with their order, and received 2% off for cash. Edwin hated to be in debt to anyone, and paid for things as promptly as he possibly could. The goods came to Holbrook by freight, and then had to be picked up in wagons and hauled to St. John's, as well as the groceries that were usually purchased in Holbrook. Edwin, usually accompanied by some of the boys, had two wagons and a four-horse team, which he used to make the seven-day trips to Holbrook. They kept good horses and often broke their horses driving them on their freight trips. There was never any lack for help when the big freight wagons pulled in, to be unloaded especially at Christmas time. The merchandise then included the usual canned goods, flour, sugar and other groceries, plus big 100-pound barrels or 30-pound wooden buckets of candy, crates of oranges, lemons, all kinds of pretty cloth, as well as special dishes and toys for Christmas. The store never made Edwin rich, but it was always a profit-making investment, because of his wise handling. They never went into debt on the goods they bought for the store, so they were always able to gain from the business. Edwin and Mariah kept the store until Eddie came home from his mission and was married. Then they traded the store and house to Eddie, and moved into another home a block north. Blacksmith. Edwin owned a blacksmith shop everywhere he lived. He could make parts for almost anything that needed fixing, and used the shop to repair their own machinery, as well as add to the family income. The first shop was set up in Brigham City in the old fort. There Edwin supplemented his income by doing repair work for the men who were employed by the railroad. When he moved to St. John's, from the Meadows, he set up a blacksmith shop about one half block west of where the East Side District School is now. Business was good, as there were many wagons, as well as much farm machinery to be repaired. In later years he looked back on special incidents, and loved to relate them to his family and friends. One of those incidents that he enjoyed telling was, when the sheriff came to get him, to put shackles on the horses of a very noted outlaw, and then fasten the outlaw to the door of a jail. Grandma always called this outlaw, Billy the Kid. Edwin did a fine job. The only difficulty was when the sheriff came in the next morning, and found the outlaw had taken the hinges off the door and was gone, door and all. Commodore Owens was the most noted sheriff in northern Arizona at that time, and was a frequent visitor at Edwin's shop. The sheriff's horses were so hard to shoe, they had to be thrown every time. All the men gathered around the shop when they saw Commodore Owens come into town, as he always brought news from other parts of the country. The sheriff had long red hair, and did not look like the tough type, but he was noted throughout the West for his bravery. One time Edwin was not at home, when some outlaws came to his house, and told Mariah they wanted their horses shod. She told them she didn't have a key to the blacksmith shop, and didn't know when Edwin would be home. They were in a hurry and said they couldn't wait, so they shut the lock off the shop door, went in and used the equipment to shoe their horses. This job done, they went back to Mariah, asked her for some food, which she fixed for them. They paid her for the food and the horseshoes and left, much to her relief. She had been afraid that the law officers would catch them there, and there would be shooting all around the place. While living in Mapleton, Edwin needed a part for a piece of machinery, and the regular blacksmith said that it couldn't be made. Edwin made one that worked even better than the regular one. Sawmills. Edwin's first sawmill was started after he had moved back to Mapleton with his family of three children. They took all their savings, and bought a water mill to saw the lumber. There was no other mill around, and there was timber on the mountains, so they did pretty well with this sawmill, until the stream went dry, and they had to move further up the mountains. Water power was not dependable enough, so Edwin bought his first steam engine and boiler for the sawmill in Mapleton. He had to go into debt $450 to buy the steam engine. His brother Lute said that Edwin would ruin the Whiting name going into debt for all that, but his brother John thought better of it, and went into the business with him. Mariah and her family moved into a little cabin up by the mill so she could cook for the mill hands. With hard work and careful management, they were able to pay for the steam engine and boiler and buy out John's share in the business. They sold all the lumber they could to people who came to the mill to buy, and took the extra to Provo and sold it for $12 a thousand, delivered. When Edwin lived at the sawmill, they usually killed enough deer in the fall to sell for tax money and other expenses. One fall they killed 18 deer, cleaned and dressed them, carefully stacked them up and covered them with a tarp. In the morning a big buck was gone, and by the tracks that were all around, they knew that a mountain lion had taken it. Edwin fixed a trap with a gun. That night, when the lion came back for another deer, it set off the trap and about 10 men heard the shot. When they arrived at the place where the deer were stored, they found the lion dead. They had very little money in those days, so when the authorities of the church called for an extra $5 from each family to finish the Salt Lake Temple, Edwin and Mariah wondered where theirs would come from. They were paying everything they could get towards their debts. Finally, Edwin sold some lumber for $5. They talked about all the things they needed it for, but finally Mariah said she knew they would be blessed if they paid it toward the temple fund, so they did. Little did they know then how many of their children and grandchildren would receive blessings in that temple. After Mariah had to move to town, Edwin ran the mill a while longer up in the canyon. He would walk to town to be with his family over Sunday, and then go back up to the mill again. Finally, he moved the mill down to town, and ran it there with the addition of a planing mill which he bought. Edwin sold his interests in Mapleton, and moved back to Arizona in 1901. He had eight children now, and an orphan boy, Leonard Taylor, who went to live with them. After he had been in Arizona a few years, he homesteaded some timber land in the White Mountains. He built a sawmill a short distance above his homestead. This mill ran for several years, before they moved it to a new site. Edwin and his sons have been in the lumbering business ever since. Eddie once said that they had never lost on a business or gone out of a business that they and their father had started. The sawmill life offered employment and work for the whole family and many others who came through the years to work for them. From the time Ernest was 6, he was assigned the job of watching the steam gauges at the mill. Edwin didn't trust some of the grown men who worked for him to do the job, but Ernest seemed to like the same things his father did and he took the responsibility very seriously. He saw all there was to see. All of Edwin's children were taught that work was enjoyable and worthwhile. Two events happened at the sawmill by the homestead that were real tragedies. Edwin's brother Charles and his family had moved to Mexico. One summer John, Charles' young son, came to Arizona and worked for Edwin and his family at this mill. John was in a terrible accident. The saw cut across the middle of his body. In spite of all they could do, John died. This was such a sorrow to Edwin and all his family that the mill was never quite the same again. The other incident was when Arthur was bitten by a mad dog that belonged to some of the people who were working on the mill. Edwin and Mariah took him to Los Angeles for treatments and were surely blessed as the treatments were successful and Arthur was spared. Homes. Edwin and Mariah lived in many houses and every one of them was a real home, the kind children like to remember and want to build for their children. Their first home was in Brigham City, Arizona. The old port was abandoned, but Edwin had bought 1/5 interest in it and they rented out some of the homes and lived in one themselves. After the railroad work was finished, they sold the place to a man who wanted to run a dairying business to supply Winslow with milk. Their second home was at the Meadows, where Mariah's parents were already living. They bought a place that was already built from someone who had moved out. It was close to her folks and they had a little plot of ground there to raise a garden. Eddie, May and Martha were all born there. In about 18-87 they moved to St. John's. Their home here was a small lumber house across the street, west from where the Coronado School now stands. The old jail was where the school now is on Cleveland Street. When Edwin and Mariah moved back to Mapleton, Utah in 1888, they rented a little house from his brother, close to his mother's home. When they were better established, they bought a large lot with an old house on it. This was always called the Old House, and later the Honey House. Ernest, Ralph and Lynn were born while they were living in this home. In the summers and while Edwin ran the mill, Mariah moved her family to a little cabin near the Hobble Creek Canyon Sawmill. In 1895, a lovely new red brick home was built on the lot where the old home was and was considered one of the best in town. Edwin and Mariah were prospering. The new home was a lovely place and business at the mill was good. Elda and Minnie were born in this house. Edwin contracted typhoid fever and his life seemed to be near the end. His father appeared to him one day, as he lay ill, and told him to move back south and finish his mission. In 1900, as soon as Edwin was able, they sold everything and prepared to move back to Arizona. Their first home in St. John's was a small lumber house at 435 West Cleveland. His brother Eck and family, who had come with them, rented a house across the street. Within a short time they bought a large lot in the center of town between Commercial Street and First East. There was a two-room adobe house already on the lot and Edwin and his boys built on three rooms or lean-tos as they were called. Arthur was born in this house, and they lived there for many years until Eddie came home from his mission, married and took over the store. It takes a heap of living in a house to make a home, and there was truly a heap of living in this house. Eddie and Ernest both left for missions from here. Eddie, May and Martha were all married from this home. Martha came home and lived 2 years with her two children, while Frank went on a mission to England. Many a party cheered its rooms, and many a play practice echoed in its walls. Candy, ice cream and cookies were made here to sell, as well as hats trimmed for sale in the store. All the living of a large happy family was involved in this home. In 1910, Edwin and Mariah sold the store to Eddie and Ethel and traded houses with them. The home they moved to was on the corner of North Washington and 3rd Street, kitty corner from the LDS Church. They remodeled this house by adding two brick rooms, with two rooms in the attic upstairs, and extended the two bedrooms on the other side. Two new fireplaces added the glow of warmth to the home at this time. Here children and grandchildren were always welcome, and Edwin and Mariah were seldom alone. Christmas, Thanksgiving and other holidays, as well as vacations, brought scores of relatives to visit. September 27, 1930, Edwin and Mariah were able to celebrate their golden wedding anniversary in this home. Friends and relatives from the whole town and neighboring places came to wish them well. Their 50 years had been full and hard but rewarding. A long table was set up in the dining room and covered with loads of food, even a whole roasted pig. Invited guests came to share, as they always had, with Edwin and Mariah. August 18, 1934, just 10 days after his 77th birthday, Edwin passed away in this home. There his body lay in state as friends and relatives came once more, this time in mourning but with respect to view for the last time, a wonderful man who had helped to make their lives richer and better. The parlor was a place of peace and quiet and sadness. Hobbies. Edwin's hobbies were varied and numerous, and he did each of them well. In fact, he excelled in any work or job he did. When he first started to drive oxen, his father said he kept trying over and over until he was a better driver than his older brothers. He loved to whittle. Until the last few years of his life, he hardly ever missed a day that he didn't whittle as he rested. He made chains and a long round piece of wood with little balls inside for each of his children. He made comic strip characters, Mud and Jeff, dolls, animals, and other articles of interest. Building furniture was a love he must have inherited from his father, who had the chair factory, for he made a big cupboard with glass doors that was always used for the best dishes. He made chests for each of his girls that still hold a place among their treasures. He made small chests for his granddaughters and tool chests for the grandsons. When one granddaughter, Nita, had rheumatic fever, he made her a little set of furniture. His little doll cradles and beds were loved by all who received them, and his tools were so numerous that every family had one or more. He loved the feel of wood and shaped it with care into useful articles for his family. Hunting and fishing were more than hobbies. They supplied a good part of the family meat. Edwin went to the canyons, fields or out in the hills every time he had a chance. Whether he was going to hunt or look for wood, he always liked to take a bake oven, some flour with a baking powder mixed in, some salt pork and barley coffee. For food he would make a sort of pone bread that all who camped with him really liked. Everything he got while he was hunting was carefully preserved and kept. He had a smokehouse, where the venison meat was carefully smoked and made into dried meat. Big wooden barrels were filled with salt water for curing. Nothing was wasted which might be used for food. Although they weren't required to have hunting licenses most of his life, he only killed what he could use for food, and never believed in waste of any kind, or killing just to be showing off his ability as a good hunter. When he was older he liked to cook. He often said that since he was shaking with his palsy anyway he might just as well be using that energy, so he churned the butter. He also liked to watch the cookies for Mariah. He could tell just when it was time to take them out without the aid of a timer. Getting breakfast was another thing he enjoyed. He always made pancakes, no matter what else they had, and ate them with butter and sugar. Edwin had kept bees, since his father had given him a swarm when he had been married only a few years. In Mapleton he had built his bees up to nearly 300 swarms before he left there. In Arizona he sent for more bees, and kept these as a sideline to get honey, to sell in the store, and to have some to sell to others. Most of his honey was sold in St. John's, but quite a lot of it went to Holbrook, Winslow and even Phoenix. He knew more about bees than anyone else in the county, and when several others tried to get started in the bee business, he advised them about the best methods for that area, and warned them about letting their bees get honey from the loco plant, which grew on the hills around the county, and was poison to cattle. It was also poison to bees, though few knew it at the time. He continued to care for his bees and work with them as long as he could walk. Gardening was another hobby, which he kept up all his lifetime. It was also a necessity to feed his large family. but he loved to experiment with different plants and crops. He usually had the first green corn in town and the first new potatoes. His cold frames were always ready with the earliest tomatoes to set out in the spring. His sweet corn had the biggest and best ears, and his popcorn the best to pop. The University of Tucson awarded him a special certificate for his excellent work in horticulture. His chickens and milk cows were special pets in his later years. He made a good living from the eggs he sold, and his cows always supplied them with plenty of rich Jersey milk with lots of cream on top. When Edwin was tired or hungry, he could go into the house and say, "Ma, my energy is gone, I've got to have a refill. Have you got a pan of clabber?" Or he would come in to hunt for some hard candy. He always carried some around, usually the little white, hard round peppermints. Reading was so much a part of Edwin's life that he couldn't have existed without it. He read everything he could find, and when reading material was scarce, he read things over again. He read the scriptures aloud to his wife and family. He loved any kind of astronomy, and read all the books he could find on it. He subscribed to a newspaper that came once a week, and read the news to his family when it came. Edwin always saw to it that his mother got the paper too, and would subscribe to things for her, because he knew she liked to read. One time an article in the paper stated that men were trying to make trains that could go 60 miles an hour. Edwin remarked to his family that it was ridiculous, human bodies were not made to go that fast. For 40 years he subscribed to the AI Route B Journal. One of his boys, Ernest, said that he thought that was the magazine they always used for the final authority on everything. Edwin was well-read, and liked to share his best love and hobby with his family and grandchildren through storytelling. He loved to tell stories, and they loved to hear them. He took the place of radios and television and movies for his children. Often his stories were from the scriptures, and he made those characters come alive for his family. He was familiar with a number of the classics, and introduced his children to such books as Ivanhoe, Ragged Dick, Tale of Two Cities, and Oliver Twist. These, with the legends and fables, were told over and over. Some of the favorites, however, were stories of his early life and experiences and stories which he made up himself. Some were of moon people and men who reached the moon, or stars and other make-believe stories about things that might happen. One of the family favorites was a continued story that ran nightly for most of the winter. It was called The Wood Demon. Edwin often repeated parts of it to his children after the original telling, because they would always beg for it to be repeated. The children always coaxed for one more, and never wanted to go to bed without a story. Storytelling relaxed Edwin, and he found it easy to entertain his grandchildren even in his older years. John W. Brown, a schoolteacher in St. John's, once said that he thought Edwin Whiting was the best-read man in St. John's on all subjects. He not only read, but he remembered what he read, and shared it with his family. Theater. One of Edwin Marion Whiting's greatest contributions to his church, his town, family and friends was the plays he put on. These were usually played for the benefit of the church, to raise funds for one cause or another. Soon after he moved to St. John's, he was asked to serve on a committee to put on plays and other entertainment. He had taken some lessons in dramatics in Utah, and had taken parts with his brother-in-law, Aaron Johnson, in plays presented in several Utah towns. Each year, and often two or three times a year, he would put on a three-act play, especially when there was an urgent need for money. The ward usually needed funds for church buildings, repairing, extra missionary funds, helping some needy family or a celebration. For these and many more causes, Edwin would produce a play. An extra good play would be performed two or even three nights, and many people came to see it a second and third time. Matinees for the children cost 5 cents. Edwin had a theory that every child should see a play if they wanted to, because there wasn't much entertainment available in those days, so he had a free matinee for the children quite often. A good melodrama, or a play that had some moral to the story, and some serious scenes, was first choice. The idea was to make the audience weep, and Edwin's plays usually did that. However, he liked good clean comedy and put on many of those. Very often if the play had been an extra sad one, he liked to give a good short comedy farce at the end of the three-act play. One of the first plays he put on in St. John's was The Two Orphans. His family was always in the cast, because he could depend on them and get them together for rehearsals. Besides, he believed in using his family, if he thought they could do the best job. May and Lynn were especially good in comedy parts, but all the children played different type characters. Eddie's favorite was probably Winlock of Winlock, as he was Winlock and Ethel was the heroine. May was the king's jester in this play, which was considered her best comedy. Martha's favorite was Eastland, in which she played Lady Isabel, Eddie was the judge and May was Barbara. Ernest's most noted character was probably Sykes and Oliver Twist and Ralph's as Fagin in the same play. Tickets sold for 25 or 30 cents and later 50 cents for reserved seats. Edwin had his own system for reserving seats. He always marked and numbered each seat on a large cardboard, and the seats, as they were sold, were checked off and the person's name written on the cardboard by that number. The plays were put on in the old assembly hall. This was the building that was used for church, dances and all other forms of entertainment and public gatherings. Scenery had to be built to fit the hall, and each set required moving in and out for each play. Stages had to be built as needed. Costumes and props had to be made and carried up the flights of stairs for each use. It was work, but it was done for good causes and considered worthwhile. The bishops and other leaders appreciated Edwin's plays, not only for the money, but for the entertainment and opportunities they offered to the young people to develop their talents. The only chance people had to take part in or see dramatic productions were those they made for themselves. Not only did those people who took part appreciate the chance, but those people who came to watch. Some of the plays were Two Orphans, Ten Nights in a Bar Room, A White Lie, The Octoon, Winlock of Winlock, Under Two Flags, Uncle Tom's Cabin, Hazel Kirk, Oliver Twist, Way Down East, Fisherman's Luck, Because I Love You, Crazy Maud, Box and Cox, Divorce Question, The Train Tomorrow, From Sumter to a Paul Maddox, Bound by an Oath, and many, many others. Church work. Sunday, Edwin went to sacrament meeting, and took his family with him. He knew that was where the Lord wanted them to be. His family thrilled to hear Edwin bless the sacrament. He did it in such a way that everyone listened, because he prayed like he meant it. The blessing on the sacrament was usually given in those days by older men, who held the Melchizedek priesthood. Edwin liked his job as ward teacher, and served as one for many years. The visits were made in the daytime. Not only did he do his duty as a teacher, but he taught his family to respectfully receive the teachers who came to their home, and be interested in what they had to say. Edwin always stopped his work, and called his family in no matter what time of day they came. Edwin was called to be counselor to Bishop Charles P. Anderson in the St. John's ward. He served on the Stake High Council under President David K. Udall. Best of all, Edwin followed the Lord's commandments, and taught his children by precept and example, to follow the teachings of the Master. He was never too busy to answer their questions about the Gospel and the Scriptures. He was never too busy to help a neighbor who needed something, or too poor to share with those who had less. His children didn't need preaching to. They could observe the Gospel in action in their father's and mother's daily lives. All of his children have actively engaged in church work. Many of them serve missions. This training has carried on to the grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Many people came to Edwin for advice. His sons always asked his opinion on all their business deals as long as he lived. He had a rare quality of using good judgment and using it quickly. In Mapleton they were digging a well near Edwin's home. It was about 14 feet deep when the sides caved in. There was a man in the well who had been filling the buckets with dirt and handing them up to others to empty. As the walls caved in, the man was covered up to his shoulders. He tried to free himself, but that made the dirt come in faster than ever. When the ones from above tried to help him, the dirt just slid down faster from the top. Edwin heard the cries for help, and when he reached the well, the man was almost completely covered. Edwin told him to hold real still, and no one else try to help from above. He then took his hammer and nailed boards together to form a box and slipped it over the man's head, just in time to keep his face from being completely covered. The box kept the man from smothering to death, while the others were able to dig the dirt from around him. He was grateful to Edwin for saving his life. Edwin and Mariah did not believe in whipping their children, so they were raised without that kind of punishment. His children were taught obedience and knew they had to mind. When he yelled for something, someone moved to get it and everyone knew what he wanted. Edwin enjoyed trading and bargaining. In about 1895, he traded a 10-acre lot that his father had given him for a gun. Edwin Sr. had given each of his sons a lot. Mariah was quite upset and told Edwin that he had traded his lot away for a song. May, who was about 11, said, "Oh my, what was the name of the song?" Edwin loved and enjoyed life each day. He was always the one who could see the best side of every situation and then find the best in people. This made a good balance for Mariah, who was inclined to look for the worst in each happening, and who worried about all the children and their daily affairs constantly. Edwin's children loved to be with him, and to go where he did. From the time they were old enough, he held one on his knee and fed him at mealtime. The family never owned or needed a high chair. Later, Edwin's grandchildren would beg to go to Grandpa's place to follow him around to the honey house, to the chicken coop for eggs, or to the corral to milk the cow, or just to sit by him and hear a story. Never were they disappointed, as Edwin liked to have them there and they knew and enjoyed it.